This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 3rd of February 2017. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 2nd of February 2017, which this week has been edited by Sue Frain, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. However, before we start, an apology to all of you who are expecting to receive a magazine recording last week. We experienced some technical problems and were unable to make the recording. These problems are now fixed, which means that we can record the newspaper this week as scheduled, and the magazine will be recorded at a later date. Also, before we start, a very warm welcome to the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Jane Rutter, who joins us today as a guest reader.
Good morning, hello.
She has kindly agreed to say a few words later on during the recording. Our other readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Lynn Parker.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. And the order of reading will be Margot, John Richards, Madam Mayor, and Lynn. The main headlines this week are call for speed cut, station protests arrives on time, call for a marker in the sand over plans for Silver Hill, and top architecture speaks out on Silver Hill. We start with the story behind the first headline.
And that is call for speed cut. Residents campaigning for improved safety. Residents campaigning for improved safety on a dangerous road are calling for more action from highway chiefs. They are demanding a cut in speed limit at the A33 and B3047 junction in Kingsworthy near Winchester. It follows the death of pedestrian Jonathan Whitfield, age 21, from Cheriton, near the junction last year, as well as a death on the A33 nearby on Sunday when a BMW hit a tree near Meadow Farm. Police are investigating the crash, which killed a 39-year-old from Chandlers Ford. His name has not yet been released. Campaigners, 50 of whom gathered at the junction at the weekend, want a reduction in the speed limit from 50 miles to 40 miles per hour, and a roundabout or traffic light, as they feel the current layout is confusing. It is understood, after they made a deputation to Hampshire County Council, that speed checks were carried out by the authority. 2 months on, campaigners still don't know the results. County Councillor Jackie Porter has asked for the results of the checks, but has only had holding replies, which cite the inquest of Mr. Whitfield as the reason. Kingsworthy Parish Council hasn't received the results either. Councillor Porter said, "I believe that this junction has the worst accident record of all the roads coming out of Winchester, and with the increase in traffic as Kings Barton, the Barton Farm residents move in, this can only get worse. Worried drivers are quite rightly taking longer to make the difficult decision to cross the traffic, causing long lines of traffic, especially at peak time," she said. Councillor Porter added, "The frustration of other drivers adds stress into the equation, and drivers report feeling pressurised into moving forward, even if they don't feel safe. Arguments continue about who has the right of way, and the dotted lines are confusing. Most people are using Loveton Lane and Park Lane to avoid the junction completely. We know the junction was created in good faith, but it hasn't worked. We just want someone at the County Council to be big enough to admit it, confuse these drivers, stop tinkering with the design, and listen to people using the junction every day who want to see a completely new layout that works to and from all directions." Speaking about the latest crash, Councillor Porter added, "It is a section of road where there is no reason to change the limit, but all the people living at Burntwood and Schroner Wood feel the speed needs to be monitored better than it is. The police should be monitoring it better. There is no realistic speed enforcement. With the Sunday crash, we do not know whether it was the weather, animals, speed, or someone falling asleep. Councillor Rob Humby, the Executive Member for Environment and Transport at Hampshire County Council, said, following the recent tragic accident, a preliminary speed survey was carried out in December, followed up by another in January, both of which are currently being analysed. I understand that people are impatient for answers, and also recognise that this junction arrangement is not typical, although in full compliance with government guidance. We are continuing to monitor traffic movements and speeds, but there are complex traffic movements here, and we need to look very carefully at the implications of any further measures before we make any alternative plans.
Station protest arrives on time. A protest against a controversial new station car park in Winchester has gone ahead despite its official launch being cancelled. The opening ceremony last Thursday was due to have been attended by MP Steve Brine, but was postponed by the organisers at the last minute. The demonstration, which included Liberal Democrat councillors, met at the Railway Inn before marching on the station with placards and whistles. The car park has been criticised for being built without planning consent and as being so poorly designed that it's dangerous for pedestrians. A South West train spokesman said, "The opening of the car park has been postponed for two reasons. Firstly, Steve Brine was no longer able to attend at that time due to parliamentary business. Secondly, we wanted to take the opportunity to review the feedback and comments received from a small number of local stakeholders on the internal layout of the walkway in the car park." At the protest, Councillor Lucille Thompson, leader of the Liberal Democrats on the City Council, said, "It is completely unacceptable that South West Trains have put profit before safety." Councillor Martin Todd said, "The footpath from St Paul's Hill to the station is a complete joke, zigzagging from side to side, in and out of the traffic, all on a route that is heavily used by pupils at Westgate School. This is such a botched job that we can't endorse it. We couldn't even contemplate attending any kind of ceremony without a cast iron promise to sort this out." Councillor Liz Hutchison added, "More than half the people who use the station get there on foot or by bicycle. But from the way that South West Trains have designed the site, you would never know it. It's not just the walking route that they've messed up. It's a hideous design. It's the wrong way round. Loads of local people are complaining. The whole thing is an embarrassment." Prior to the protest, Chris Higgins, former director of estates at Winchester University, at Winchester Town Forum, described the car park as, quote, "the very worst development I can remember in this wonderful city," unquote. He added, "It is an act of public vandalism damaging our much-loved city." Fellow campaigner Robert Hutchinson added, "This council has given walking priority status this year. South West Trains have no interest in environmental interests. It is an insult to people in Winchester. It is not a ward issue, but a town issue."
Call for a marker in sand over plans for Silver Hill. A city councillor has called for a marker in the sand for the completion of the Silver Hill development. The multi-million pound city centre revamp was discussed during a progress report of the Central Winchester Regeneration Supplementary Planning document. Councillor Ian Tate said, "The number of people who ask me, when will something happen? What is the timescale?" In response, Corporate Director Steve Tilbury said, "It would be premature to give a date." When asked if it would take a minimum of 5 years, he replied, "We are not expecting development to take place sooner than that." Councillor Rose Burns said, "We need to get it right this time. We have every confidence in JTP an architectural and planning consultancy, who are consulting the public on the SPD. I think I am afraid people have to be patient for a little while longer. The City Council is attempting to resurrect the redevelopment following its collapse last year. JTP's launch will be on February the 10th, then a community planning weekend will be on March the 24th to the 25th. The £150 million redevelopment involving flats and shops was hugely controversial, sparking major demonstrations, including a 1,000-person march in 2015.
Top architect speaks out on Silver Hill. An international prize-winning Winchester architect has expressed fears about the relaunch of the Silver Hill scheme. Robert Adams, founder of Adam Architecture, voiced fears the City Council may be on course to make the same mistakes as it did over the one that collapsed last year. That scheme saw the Council controversially opting for a comprehensive redevelopment involving just one firm of architects, Allies and Morrison. Mr. Adam has won the Most Valuable Architecture Award, scooping the 217 Richard H. Dryhouse Prize, valued at $200,000. Mr. Adam, whose firm is based in Hyde, said it was good to hire JTP to organise a new public consultation over the planning blueprint for Silver Hill. JTP will do their best to draw in as many people as possible. The more who help to participate, the better. It is important that you get a good cross-section of Winchester, the cathedral, the college, the villages, the outlying towns, but you will never satisfy everybody. However, he said he has misgivings. The first Silver Hill was defended to the hilt by council officers, but they need to step back, take a deep breath and say, OK, that really failed for a lot of reasons and we now have to listen to advice. But I'm concerned that there's still an agenda. He said it was vital more than one firm of architects is involved. To have a major area designed by one firm would be appalling. It doesn't matter how good that firm is, it would destroy the character of the place. Thought should be given not to a comprehensive scheme, but a sequential one that evolves gradually. We don't know how things are going to change over the next 5 years. The more complex the scheme, the more flexible, and that is good. Mr. Adam said he would be interested in getting involved. We always like to work in Winchester.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Alexander, Reginald Alexander, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 92. Boucher, Greta Mary Boucher, in Oakland's nursing home on the 23rd of January, aged 97. Dancock, Brian Dancock, on the 17th of January, aged 84. Knight, R.J. Knight, known as John, on the 18th of January, aged 94. Osgood, Kathleen Osgood, aged 87. Riggs, Stella June Riggs, on the 14th of January. Sidebottom, May Sidebottom, formerly Williams, nay Lever, on the 18th of January. Talbot, Jean Talbot, on the 18th of on the 28th of January, aged 88. Weller, Edna Weller, on the 27th of January, aged 100. And now we have Christian comment.
And this week is written by the Reverend Graham Burkett, Rector of the Upper Itchen Benefice and Area Dean of Alsford, and he entitles it Challenging Game of Thrones. Recently, my brother, whom I love, wrote on his Facebook page that he had just completed watching series 1 to 6 of Game of Thrones. Apparently, this had taken him some time, and I wasn't really sure what that meant. So I googled it and found that the Game of Thrones is a fantasy drama. There were lots of other words used in the descriptor, but I didn't understand them. My brother lamented, "What am I going to do now?" His friends suggested, among other things, that he should start a game. Some suggested getting the video game, others the beer made by Omegang, jewellery, bobble-headed figures made by Funko. You could even buy a replica throne for $30,000. There are podcasts, live shows, and I assume a Game of Thrones anorak. But without much thought, I added my own suggestion. Why didn't he read a book? The onslaught was swift and merciless. The Game of Thrones wolves took chunks out of me for making such an old-fashioned suggestion. Actually, it quite disturbed me, because it was the second time in a week that I had been called a relic. Eventually, my brother asked, what book could match the sheer escapism and entertainment value of watching the Game of Thrones? I panicked. Did I have the courage to suggest the Bible? I am a vicar, so I'm duty-bound to suggest the Bible first, am I not? I paused to consider my options. I didn't suggest the Bible, but what could I suggest? Anything by Hemingway, Kipling, the Bronte sisters, Shakespeare? What about satire? There's Ron Johnson, Marcus Brigstock. What about Han Falada's Alone in Berlin? That's a particular favourite. Robert St. Aubrey. Some poetry. Tennyson. Emil Haskins. R.S. Thomas. Any book. All books. Anything was better than sitting in front of a television endlessly, I suggested. After I had posited my suggestions, I felt like a condemned man, blindfolded and led out to the firing squad. I remind myself that Clive James once pointed out that culture is not a matter of credentials, merely intensity. My brother's solution was to suggest that I was adopted. I regretted not proposing the Holy Bible, because everything anyone could ever want is held in that great book. The New Testament tells us how to know Jesus and gives us everything we need to grow spiritually, and therefore as a human being. The Bible is not a religious book. Religion is a matter of structure. The Bible is a matter of spiritual growth. Your spirituality will grow as your closeness to Jesus grows, as you read and grow through learning and put into practice from it. It is an aperture by which the great question, who am I? What is the meaning of all this? How can my soul live well in this world? How can I know God? Will and can be answered. The question is, are you brave enough to read it? And more importantly, act upon what you learn.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do it by either telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or by writing to the editor in the traditional way at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We've got quite a crop of letters this week, I think 14 in total. Inevitably, they are largely concerned with planning issues, the proposals for the Theatre Royal, Silver Hill, and the station car park. So without further ado, we'll get on with the first letter.
Yes, and it's entitled A Major Attraction, and it was written by Russell Fairchild, who was the chairman of Winchester Theatre Fund from 1993 to 2003. Sir, with reference to Michael Carr's report in the Chronicle, January the 26th, it may be helpful to recall that the ideas expressed by Councillor Berry in her report to the City Council's Overview and Scrutiny Committee were considered in depth some 20 years ago. It was decided then that building a new theatre for Winchester on the water meadows would be unlikely to be commercially viable. Trying to compete with the Mayflower and the other high-profile venues in the region would be unwise. Viability was more likely to be achieved by a theatre in Winchester offering complementary, not competing, services and products. This decision was subsequently endorsed by Arts Council England, ACE, in the context of the lottery grants which were awarded for the project. The designs proposed for redevelopment of the theatre in 1998 to 1999, included an attractive restaurant in the cellar. Arts Council England advised that this would be very costly to build and to operate. In their experience, too often such facilities contributed to the demise of theatres rather than to their success. With many good restaurants only a few minutes' walk from the theatre, such a facility would be unnecessary and a risk to the operating company's business plan. The significance of the theatre's history and its architecture will be well known to the city councillors, as will the limitations on its use and value deriving from its listed status. The charitable trusts which own and operate it ensure that it is properly maintained. However, ongoing capital investment is essential if a community asset such as this is to remain viable. This is beyond the unaided capabilities of those charities. Winchester City Council must therefore make prudent provision for continuing capital investment in the building and its infrastructure to ensure that it will remain viable and one of the city's major attractions. That's from Russell Fairchild, Chairman of Winchester Theatre Fund, 1993 to 2003.
This letter is from Phil Yates, who is the Honorary Historian and Archivist at the Theatre Royal in Winchester. It's headed Impractical Plan. Sir, Councillor Eileen Berry's idea of moving the Theatre Royal to the River Park Leisure Centre when vacated sounds good in theory, but would not be practical, as in the Chronicle of January the 26th. Winchester is not Southampton, where the population is treble the size. The Mayflower, which seats over 2,000, not 800 as stated by Eileen, is classed as a number one touring venue. The Royal comes under the mid-touring group of theatres, such as the Haymarket, Basingstoke. Our theatre is geared to touring companies, such as the London Classic Theatre Company, who prefer to perform in smaller venues. As Ian Steele mentioned, there is potential to gain another 40 to 50 seats. A few years ago, Mark Cortis, the outgoing chief executive, suggested reintroducing the stall seats in the passageway leading to the stalls. These were removed some years ago to construct the passageway because of the noise of the traffic along Jury Street, the entrance then coming straight into the foyer. Now the entrance has been moved further along the street and a solid wall erected in its place, there is no reason why the seating capacity cannot be increased. I was one of the late Stanley Steele's Gang of Six, formed over 40 years ago to save the theatre from demolition. I would hate to see all our efforts being destroyed by a whim of a councillor. Besides, as the theatre's historian, I have discovered it is unique. The last surviving cine-variety theatre in the country in its original state and still operating. I have conducted many tours of the theatre over the past 40 years, and visitors have all commented how lucky Winchester is to have such a lovely theatre. Nearly 10,000 tickets were sold for our most successful pantomime to date, Cinderella, with full houses at virtually all performances over a four-week run. In fact, some performances are already sold out for the theatre's next Christmas show, Peter Pan. They surely love our little theatre. No, Eileen, please leave our Theatre Royal alone. And that's from Phil Yates, the historian and archivist of the Theatre Royal.
And this is a letter from Richard Evans, which starts Vanity Projects. Sir, the suggestion to move the Theatre Royal to River Park, Chronicle, January 26th, demonstrates the City Council's liking for vanity projects. They are not content moving the River Park Leisure Centre out of town. From a site easily accessible by the city's residents and visitors to one near a motorway junction, therefore by gifting it to the county at the city's expense. Now a councillor wants to build a white elephant on the vacated site. Councillor Berry said she was inspired by a trip to the Mayflower, a 2,300-seat theatre in Southampton. Basingstoke's Anvil Theatre seats 1,400. Salisbury Playhouse has 517 seats. Our region has several smaller theatres, including the Haymarket, the Salberg Studio, Salisbury City Hall, the Bury, the Nuffield, and yet others due to open in Southampton. The catchment areas for all these theatres overlap in Winchester, and the market for major theatre here is very doubtful. Our Theatre Royal may only have 400 seats and limited facilities by modern standards, but it is a delightful building with a superb ambience. If anything, Winchester needs more performance spaces smaller than the Theatre Royal. A few years ago, the council removed its support for the Tower Arts Centre, and Winchester effectively lost an important venue. The performance space at the Discovery Centre has proved a poor substitute. About the same time, the city lost the North Pole on Parchment Street, a short-lived and basic venue, but one beloved by local musicians. A new arts complex of smaller performance spaces, rehearsal and meeting rooms would meet a need, but a flagship theatre, no. Appropriately in this instance, the suggestion to move the Theatre Royal seems to come from La La Land, from Richard Evans, Fordington Avenue, Winchester.
John Miller writes, "We can't lose the Theatre Royal." Sir, I was alarmed at the suggestion that the Theatre Royal should be moved to another location with more space, as quoted in the Chronicle of January the 26th. The theatre is one of the cultural glories of Winchester, and the city owes a huge debt of gratitude to Lady Bland for saving it in the 1990s. When we founded the Winchester Festival in 1998, I couldn't wait for it to reopen, providing us with a stage fit for the stars we wanted to present. I can still remember the delight they all expressed when they stepped onto the stage for the first time. Judy Dench, Michael Pennington, Sean Phillips, Julian Glover and Isla Blair, Tim West and Prunella Scales, Claire Bloom, Maureen Lipman and Charles Dance. They more or less all had the same reaction. What a lovely space. And they were all actors with wide experience of theatrical spaces. So please, don't let us lose it. Build a bigger concert hall by all means, but never pull down the existing Theatre Royal. John Miller, Bishop Sutton, Alsford.
This letter, entitled Allegations, is from Simon H.B. Cook. Sir, Martin Wilson's letter, Chronicle, January the 26th, is a spectacular own goal because his direct criticism of my alleged involvement in the River Park Leisure Centre contract is totally misplaced. At the time the contract was negotiated and awarded, I was the Director of Leisure Services at the London Borough of Richmond-upon-Thames. Mr. Wilson was also critical of my handling of his regular representations to the Scrutiny Committee about the Leisure Centre contract when I was the chairman. However, it was only after reading all the correspondence and supporting documentation that I took the same view as the officers about Mr. Wilson's obsessive representations. In coming to this conclusion, I was mindful of the demolition of his allegations in detailed responses to Mr. Wilson by the professional officers. As scrutiny chairman, I was entirely satisfied that Mr. Wilson was given ample opportunity to represent his allegations to the committee, and aware that the chair of audit was of the same opinion. At the time, I had to make the decision that there had to be a limit as to how much committee and professional officer time could continue to be taken up with Mr. Wilson's representations. Simon H.B. Cook, Shepherdsdown, Oxford.
This is a letter from Councillor Kim Gottlieb from East Stratton, and it's headed Complex Process. Sir, it is claimed by those with an axe to grind or with politics to play that I want either no development and to preserve Winchester in Aspic, or to develop a Tower of Babel in its centre. It can't be both, and in truth it's neither. Yes, I am pro-development, but successful regeneration demands an appreciation of the complexity of the process, and above all, sensitivity towards context. The Chiswick Roundabout proposal, recently mentioned, Chronicle Letters, January the 26th, is a superb and appropriate response to its gateway to London position, at the head of a two-mile corridor of tall and large buildings which abut the elevated section of the M4. I have a non-active role in the development of the current proposal, which is being promoted by Galliard Homes, who are one of London's leading residential developers. The context of Winchester City Centre, and Silver Hill in particular, is in every material respect entirely different. In this instance, I have consistently held that its development must be sensitive to the scale and character of an historic city, the heritage of which must be regarded as the paramount influence of any development. This objective does not preclude modern architecture or innovative concepts, but it does necessitate high quality and integrity in every respect, in terms of design, use, and execution. I have always felt that any development of this site, of which there should be numerous components, should be civic-natured and less ruthlessly commercially driven than was the case previously. The public realm, the site's archaeology, and historic watercourses are all exceedingly important. Silver Hill is a pivotal site, and its successful development will radiate economic, social, and cultural benefits across the whole district. The new leader and the new chief executive, together with the appointment of JTP, give me every reason to believe that we are heading in the right direction. To those who struggle to understand the relevance of context, I'd explain that I'll wear shorts and sandals to the beach, but my DJ to a ball. Occasionally, I have thought about wearing a tutu to council meetings, but that's another story. And that's from Councillor Kim Gottlieb in East Stratton.
This is a letter entitled Acted Unlawfully from Dorian Hope, a retired judge. Sir, in your edition of July 16, 2015, you publicised how I considered the previous Silver Hill scheme to be a disaster. Councillor Gottlieb has asked me to look over the papers of the scheme to that date and give a written legal opinion on what had happened. What my studies revealed was that ever since 2003, Winchester City Council have acted unlawfully and have been fully aware of this since 2007, if not before. Yet they took no steps to rectify this and pressed on until the High Court stopped them in 2014. Their answer to this judgment was not to rectify the situation and abide by the law, but to turn again to the discredited scheme of 2009, which has now failed. The City Council has still to give a commitment for full competitive tendering to apply to this site, and that they will now comply with the law in all of its future development. Being the major landowner, planning authority, and in league with the sole developer, caused conflicts of interest in the previous schemes that were simply staggering. In all of this, the people of Winchester were disregarded. They spent 4 years giving their views, and as a result, the 2003 Broadway Friarsgate developer brief was drawn up. Immediately, the council ignored it, stating it was advisory only. The brief called for a full archaeological survey. One is still awaited. In the important height and massing section of the document, it stated, building height should be limited to 4 and occasionally 5 stories, taking as a guide the height of Walt Staplers Hall. This will provide the appropriate scale without over-dominating the street. Again, the council ignored this, proposing large-scale 5 and 6-storey development. Unless the council abides by what the people have previously said they wanted for this site and agree to fully comply with the law, we will have another disaster on our hands. I hope that will not happen, but many of those who were involved previously are still in place for this new consultation that is now proposed, and they have shown a great unwillingness to date and listen to what people have been telling them all along, or to understand and abide by the law. This letter is from Derwin Hope, retired judge, Christchurch Gardens, Winchester.
Rod Graham writes on car park issues. Sir, I recently wrote to the Hampshire Chronicle over my concerns about the visual appearance of the new car park structure at Winchester Station. Now that the car park is accessible to the public, I had the opportunity to visit the structure properly and was astonished at the very obvious aspects of the design, which lead directly to conflicts of health and safety between pedestrians and car users. The internalized walkway, demarked by blue paint and intended for pedestrian use, guides users into the path of space intended for car use. And worse still, the vehicular down ramp from the first floor is orientated to be on a direct collision course with the entrance area of the northbound platform foyer space. It is remarkable, is it not, that such a situation has been allowed by Network Rail and Southwest Trains. Should anything happen at the site, they will be the first people to end up in the dock for contravening basic health and safety regulations. Do they not see what they have taken responsibility for by endorsing this ridiculously dangerous project? What is more remarkable still is that the same people who signed this design off have essentially invited a conflict of health and safety between their very own customers. Both car drivers and pedestrians are likely to be the very same people who get onto the trains, yet both user groups have been forced into a compromised, dangerous environment in order to use the services provided by Network Rail and Southwest Trains. A perfect storm. Leaving things as they are can no longer be an option, because concerns about health and safety have been publicly voiced by many people. Here it is on public record. I've got only one idea to help you. Take it down. Take the whole thing down immediately. You might lose face, but you won't need to lose any more sleep waiting for the health and safety executive to come knocking at your own front door. Customer care is dead. Long live customer care. So writes Rod Graham, Director of Design Engine Architects Limited, Coco Close, Winchester.
Keith Hatter writes about many obstacles. Sir, as chairman of Winchester Area Access for All, a forum for highlighting obstacles to access, and blind myself, I was appalled and dismayed when I attempted to enter Winchester Rail Station via the car park on its western side, over which decking has recently been built. The public right-of-way through the car park follows a series of corners, taking one around pillars and parking spaces, and forces the pedestrian back and forth from one side of a large area to the other. I continually encountered metal barriers in unexpected places. Had it not been for sighted companions, I should have become lost. Even more significantly than this, this took place in a space in which one is surrounded by vehicles travelling in and out of parking spaces in what, to someone without sight, appears entirely random. The route is delineated by painted markings on the ground, which meant that without assistance I could not have kept to the path, placing me in even more danger. I am dismayed by this construction's being carried out after consultation with stakeholder groups who made it clear that a straightforward route on which pedestrians are separated from motor traffic is in everyone's interest. This new layout discriminates against those with disabilities, one of the categories covered by the 2010 Equality Act, by placing them in greater danger than the general public. The existence of an alternative is proved by the fact that whilst the construction was taking place, a temporary, straight and separate pathway was installed, and therefore could have been incorporated into the final design. The sacrifice of a few of the extra parking spaces to achieve this would have been far preferable to the sacrifice of safety. This extension to the car park was due to be opened on January the 26th by Steve Bryan MP, but the event was cancelled. I hope and trust that this was because Mr. Bryan thought better of lending his endorsement to this appalling design. That's from Keith Hatter, Chairman, Winchester Area Access for All.
This letter is from Jock MacDonald. It's headed Pathway Protest. Sir, I took part in the recent demonstration against Southwest Trains' two-tier car park in Winchester. It is a very ugly building. But the protest was directed particularly at its pathways. They are dark, dangerous, suddenly veer away from their true direction, and cars park across them. Southwest Trains are not subject to the usual planning regulations, but they are just following the local precedents. The majority party councillors in Hampshire and Winchester pay scarce attention to these vital matters: clean air, exercise through walking, and the need to maintain Winchester's unique draw as a city. Most of these councillors live in the countryside and take for granted exercise in clean air, but forget it when they jump into their cars. Winchester is obviously no different, as far as they are concerned, to Basingstoke or Southampton, cities with their own qualities. In this 21st century, our generation is unusually knowledgeable about the sort of situations that will confront us before the century's end. Clean air, exercise, and a sense of beauty are going to be vital for our health and well-being. And that's from Jock MacDonald of Stockbridge Road in Winchester.
And now a letter from James Anderson, headed Spurious Claims. Sir, the claim by Peter Rees that in Winchester over 50 people will die each year due to toxic air pollution related chest and lung conditions, letters January 26th, is of course tosh. The studies on which he depends are purely statistical associations, often bedevilled with confirmation bias at every stage, as in the Treasury post-Brexit forecasts. It is of the essence that such studies are subjected to high-level review before being given any credence. The Committee on the Medical Effects of Air Pollutants, COME-EAP, performs that function and reports with the findings. We conclude that while there is some epidemiological evidence of association between the incidence or prevalence of chronic bronchitis and long-term exposure to air pollution, overall the evidence is not sufficient to infer a causal relationship in the UK today. Add to that the total deaths in Winchester of around 20 per year from chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, with smoking as the main cause, and credibility for Mr. Rees's claims appears to be absent. We all want zero pollution, while also wanting quick and inexpensive transport and other comforts. There is a balance to be struck. Winchester would be a better place for traffic and buses to be removed from its centre, but quite how that might be achieved is unclear. No obvious route for a ring road is in evidence. Using spurious claims of multiple deaths and council irresponsibility to work up a blue funk does nothing for the serious business of finding a solution that offers easy and inexpensive movement in and around Winchester. And this was written by James Anderson, Wright's Close, South Wanston.
Kate McIntosh writes, "It's a sorry sight, sir. Following the welcome recent announcement that Winchester City Council is taking steps to arrest the decay and dereliction set in King's Walk and Silver Hill area, is it not time that they applied a similar policy to their small but charming asset, the former Registrar's Office, which forms an increasingly sorry sight, meeting all rail travellers arriving in Winchester? It is rumoured that the Muslim community of Winchester expressed an interest in using this building as a mosque. To allow such a use would not only extend a hand of friendship to a group which must feel increasingly threatened in this post-Brexit, Trump-dominated climate, help the city's coffers, but arrest the sorry state of dereliction overtaking a structure on which public money was spent about 20 years ago, including the insertion of a delightful work in stained glass." So writes Kate McIntosh, West End Terrace, Winchester.
Safety hazard is the title of this letter from Richard Pott. "Sir, I am writing because on two occasions I have fallen off my bicycle at the bend on the Compton side of the Hockley Viaduct. On the first occasion, January the 2nd, I ended up in A&E at Winchester Hospital, and on the second, January the 25th, even though I was extremely cautious, I fell off, though without injury, and had, due to the icy conditions, to walk most of the way into Winchester. I defy anybody to cycle or even walk round that bend without mishap when there is black ice. The surface is very smooth. I will be sending a copy of this letter to Hampshire County Council, Winchester City Council and the Winchester Mayor in the hope that some action will be taken to nullify a serious safety hazard." That's from Richard Pott, Martin Fields, Compton.
This letter is entitled Thank You Notes. "Sir, I read Anne Lloyd's letter about saying thank you, Chronicle, January the 26th. The answer is next time she wants to send a present to someone who does not acknowledge her presence is to send them a packet of thank you notes. Hopefully they will take the hint." And that's from Judith Radcliffe, Northbrook Avenue in Winchester.
It was quite a slug of letters, so it's nice to end on a lighter note from that. We now move on to items of historical interest. We have them from 150 and 25 years ago. And after that, we will have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, and then we'll be followed by a first person comment. So we start off with 100 years ago.
And this is from 100 years ago, February the 3rd, 1917. German naval threat. Germany, in her despair, has sent a note to the United States which in effect declares a hunger war on that country and on the world. It is notified that the Central Powers will proceed as from February 1st, without further warning and by every means, to interrupt sea traffic round Great Britain, France and Italy, as well as in the Eastern Mediterranean, in certain specified prohibited areas. Berlin is seriously exercised over the new minefield in the North Sea. Emphasis is laid on the severity of the British blockade, which it is declared is impairing Germany's national vitality. Germany threatens to add to her crimes a systematic war on British hospital ships. Under the pretense that these ships have often been misused for the transport of munitions and troops, the German government announces that traffic of hospital ships will no longer be tolerated between this country, France and Belgium. A Foreign Office communique denies that such ships have been used otherwise than as hospital ships and states that the British government has decided that, if the threat is carried out, reprisals will immediately be taken.
50 years ago, February the 4th, 1967. Dirty bottles. With unfortunate regularity, in law courts throughout the country, milk distributing firms have been fined for selling milk in dirty bottles. Such cases are prosecuted by authorities like the Hampshire County Council. Yet one plea is made by the firms when they have pleaded guilty. They state that they have installed the most modern washing plants that money can buy, and that throughout the intensive washing process, the bottles are exhaustively checked for any foreign matter. But thousands of bottles are returned every day by consumers in a condition that no washing plant, however modern, can rectify.
25 years ago, January the 31st, 1992, poll tax clash. Conservative councillors, eager to keep community charge bills down, clashed with their Democrat and Labour colleagues over spending plans at a Winchester City Council committee. A 3.5-hour budget wrangle at the Health and Works Committee on Tuesday produced cuts of £47,680, but also a blunt warning from a council officer over the possibility of at least one job loss. The most controversial measure approved was a proposal to cut funds by 20% for work to improve the road environment of Winchester. Committee Chairman Jock MacDonald called on the councillors to demand more money from the County Council rather than endanger this important service.
This is the Hampshire Chronicle's editorial comment. Lesson of a car park built without scrutiny. Anyone who doubts the vital importance of public scrutiny needs only read the headline story and read the letters about the new multi-storey car park at Winchester Railway Station. The recently completed car park is appallingly designed, both inconvenient and dangerous for pedestrians. The car park was developed by South West Trains without the need for planning permission because of development rights. The company exploited a loophole that allows it to undertake technical operational work without the need for a planning application. The regulations are designed to cover such things as new signal boxes. Whether it should cover passenger car parking is another issue. Had the car park and its design been considered by council planning officers and city councillors under the eyes of local newspapers such as this one, it is unlikely to have been approved. There is a view that planning is a bureaucratic impediment to dynamic economic development. This is mistaken. How a company in the 21st century could with a straight face propose and build such a terrible thing is a matter for concern. It raises strong doubts about its competence. If they cannot design a simple car park, how can they possibly run a railway?
And this is Lost Opportunity at River Island by Joanne Lewis. We can all relax, the high street is saved. If the rumours are true that Tesco is opening up in the retail unit formerly occupied by River Island, then all is well. Tourists will now come from further afield to look at the site of possibly the most garish signage of any retail and marvel how badly it chimes with its surroundings. Only the Spinnaker Tower will stand out more on Google Earth. Surely the sight of a shop with lighting so bright a dentist could carry out root canal surgery in the checkout area will pull them in. Or what about the hypnotic noise of the automatic doors in a sound off with the street buskers? and tours could be offered of vegetable and dairy section to explain the slow death of British farming. Don't get me wrong, I often use Tesco's for its great range, even if it started to go down the Aldi route by reducing the number of lines on offer. It occupies an important place in a lot of people's shopping routines. Its competitive pricing and organic options pull in the punters. Also, it seems to have a very inclusive policy on staffing. There are always lots around who are very polite. It has an impressive diversity when it comes to employing people with extra challenges or disabilities. Nevertheless, it is a giant company notorious for the squeezing of small-scale suppliers that now comes with the dubious add-on of a planned takeover of the whole wholesale booker. Do we really want to see this controversial brand gain a prime spot at the heart of Winchester, giving it a much-needed kudos and respectability, whilst farmers in our region suffer? Maybe, as other councils do, it can be made to tone down a bit. For example, when McDonald's wanted to open in the centre of Cambridge for the first time, in a very historic and picturesque walkway off Trinity Street, it was allowed to do so only if it agreed not to have its trademark sign outside. It remains quite hidden and hard to spot. I'm not suggesting that we can only accept Messrs Tesco and Sons and demand to step inside a shop with sawdust on the floor and lit by oil lamps, where female staff wear linen bonnets, the men leather chaps, and everyone uses the language of Chaucer. Although if it had a must-look-like-Poldark policy, I'd drop my opposition and go and work there myself. However, as has been pointed out so eloquently in recent months in various letters to this newspaper, there is distinct poverty in council requirements about what new builds look like. Horribly ugly seems not to matter. The design bar can be set very low when it comes to beauty and frontage that blends in. The new second-story car park at the railway station is a classic. No one was expecting a Baroque ceiling, but my goodness, a new record's by being set in hideousness, not to mention Alice in Wonderland proportions. I've twice driven into a metal post reversing out of a compact parking space in just 2 weeks, a record even for me. Should we accept that only the likes of Tesco's are able to meet the astronomical rents demanded by the greedy owners of retail space, on the grounds that it is the logic of a free market in the age of internet shopping? Not when it comes to areas of historical importance and natural beauty. How much more attractive and in the wider interests of the long-term economic health of the High Street would it be to have had in River Island space an independent food market, a permanent site for some of the wonderful stalls selling fish, cheeses, olives and local produce off the street? As economic historians argue, free trade always exists alongside some form of protectionism. It is just a matter of whose interests we choose to protect.
A couple of items of what will be happening during February in Winchester. At the Theatre Royal, from Wednesday the 22nd of February to Saturday the 25th of February at 7:30 in the evenings, together with a Saturday matinee at 2:30 p.m., the Encore Youth Theatre will present Oklahoma with a cast of, I quote, young, energetic actors and singers. Tickets are £16 or £13.50 for the matinee, obtainable from the Theatre Royal box office on 01962 840440. That's 01962 840440. Oklahoma from the 22nd of February to the 25th of February. And also on Saturday the 25th of February at Winchester Cathedral at 7 p.m, Joseph and his Technicolor Dreamcoat will be performed by the newly formed Winchester Cathedral Junior Choir, together with Fair Oak Junior School Choir and Greenfield Junior School Choir. Tickets are £25, £20, £15 or £10 from the Cathedral box office. That's 01962 857 275. 01962 857 275. That's Joseph in his amazing Technicolor dream coat Saturday the 25th at the cathedral. So those both sound to be fun events. Lighting up times, this week the sun rises about 7:30 in the morning and will be setting about 5 o'clock in the evening or late afternoon. If you have any problems, if you know of someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. Before we start with the items of general news interest, I'd like to ask the Mayor to say a few words.
Thank you very much. I just want to say what a wonderful institution it is, the Winchester Talking newspaper, and what a privilege it is for me to come and join you this morning to read. And one of the most important things I do as Mayor is to thank people. So I think on behalf of all your readers, if I could thank you, and if you could pass on the message of thanks to everybody else who comes in regularly and reads for the Talking newspaper, it is something that is hugely appreciated. And I know that that it's a very much appreciated thing that you do. So thank you on behalf of everybody who listens to the Talking newspaper, and behalf of the whole community. And I'm sure that the Chronicle are delighted that you go through it in such detail every week. So I think now on to the next lot of news stories.
Building pioneer rewarded. A Winchester engineer has been recognised for his role in revolutionising building construction. Dr. Jonathan Ingram, of St. Swithin Street, received the Royal Academy of Engineering Prince Philip Medal for his work developing building information modelling, known as the BIM. BIM allows users to build a virtual model containing all the information about a building, including working drawings and live data, enabling builders to coordinate work. It has resulted in shorter construction times and safer builds. His Sonata software, completed in 1985, was based on his experience of 15 years of graphics, mathematical, and engineering projects. Sonata has since been used by around 1,000 firms worldwide in the design and build of structures, including the Australian National Tennis Theatre, the British Library, and Portcullis House in Westminster. Dr. Ingram said, "I was very pleased and surprised to win the Prince Philip Medal. As an engineer, it is hugely rewarding to be recognised by the Royal Academy of Engineers, and it makes all those years working alone in the attic worthwhile. The uptake of the single model has come as something of a surprise. One does these things without great hopes, and to see it being used extensively is gratifying. After my time in the attic, selling the system was difficult because it demanded that people had to work together. Other winners include Sir Frank Whittle for inventing the jet engine, the inventor of the electric car, and the inventor of the optical fibre."
New cafe creates social media stir. It is the cafe at a Winchester beauty spot which got through the planning process without an objection. But plans for the Handlebar Cafe at the Viaduct Way between Garnier Road and St Catherine's Hill have belatedly stirred things on social media. People have taken to Facebook to complain about the cafe after seeing a sign announcing the cafe is coming months after it was approved by the South Downs National Park Authority. The project has been created by youngsters from the Spud Group. We don't quite know what that stands for, S-P-U-D, except we can tell you that it's an organisation promoting art, architecture and education. So the project has been created by youngsters from the Spud Group and will be run by Bespoke Biking, which will provide bike repairs, riding events, as well as the cafe. One person simply said, bad. Another wrote, I run there all the time and can't see myself stopping for a mid-run cappuccino. Another said, St. Catherine's Hill is a place of outstanding natural beauty and a wildlife conservation area. It does not need to be littered with the inevitable rubbish that this will bring. However, just as many people who criticised the cafe came out and wrote in support of it. One person wrote, what a fantastic idea. I've been keeping an eye on this project for the past year or so, and I'm so excited that the wheel is finally in motion. Personally, I think it's a wonderful idea, and well done to the young people for their innovative plan. It may even encourage more cyclists, walkers, and joggers to the area. Mark Drury from the Spud Group said, we held consultations, we left leaflets, held exhibitions. It's been on the Winchester City Council minutes. There have been stories about this in the Chronicle and the Daily Echo. This should not surprise anybody. We would have not got planning permission if we created something that was seen as inappropriate. Mr. Drury said that the building will be timber clad with low level lighting, and said they are working with architects and planners to ensure the impact of the building is minimal. He added, this is to create a community where there's not anything. It's not a commercial business. It is run as a community interest company and owned by a charity.
Youth club reunion to pay tribute to stalwart leader. A youth club is planning a reunion of past and present members to celebrate its leader of more than two decades. Fiona Watton has led Mitchell Dever Youth Club at Northbrook Hall for more than 21 years. The club is marking the occasion with a reunion open day in the Village Hall on March the 11th from 2 till 4 p.m. Fiona said, it's never been a chore. The young people always bring energy and a sense of fun. Reflecting back, I remember the good times the young people have had, but also the tough times and decisions they face in everyday life. Contributing to the health and well-being of the young people has been hugely rewarding, and I'm very proud. I can't wait to meet the children of previous members, who perhaps one day will come to the club. Also, to see everyone in one place and catch up on their stories will be wonderful. Mitchell Dever's Youth Club is delivered by charity Street Reach, and is free to all young people aged 11 to 18. It currently has 31 young people regularly attending. Any photos or memorabilia would be very welcome.
Tackle speeders. Winchester's Town Forum chairman has appealed for help to tackle speeding in the city. Councillor Anne Weir praised the number of volunteers who have been trained so far as part of the Community Speed Watch programme, but urged the forum to help recruit volunteer organisers. Speed Watch takes place in 20 mile per hour, 30 mile per hour and some 40 mile per hour limits or zones. As part of the scheme, volunteers use equipment that monitors passing traffic and records the details, later adding them to a database. Councillor Weir highlighted the need for area coordinators and an overall volunteer coordinator. We still have one hurdle to vault, she said. I would encourage everyone to look at their contacts.
Paralympic star to attend celebrations. A Paralympic star will visit Winchester following record-breaking success at last year's Olympics. Dave Henson, one of Team GB's Paralympic record medal-winning side in the Rio, will help kick-start the celebrations of Round Table's 90th year. The former Royal Engineer from Southampton, who claimed a bronze medal in the 200 metres for T42 runners, is taking time out from his training for the 2017 World Para-Athletic Games to appear at the showpiece event in Winchester's Great Hall on March the 11th. It will feature 600 members, past and present, plus international tablers, gathering for this historic occasion. Mr. Henson, who had both legs amputated below the knee after standing on an improvised explosive device while leading a patrol in Afghanistan, played a major role in the inaugural Invictus Games. He captained the British Armed Forces team, winning the 200 metres event. He has gone on to secure a number of sporting achievements, achieved a BSc in biomechanical engineering, and was awarded an MBE in the Queen's Birthday Honours List in 2014. He said, "The work that round tables do for communities across the United Kingdom and Ireland is incredible, and their support for the armed forces is no exception. Bringing financial and physical support to so many organisations over such a long period of time has helped effect positive change on so many people. I am both delighted and excited to be attending the celebrations for their 90th anniversary." Roundtable President Mark House said, "We are so pleased Dave Henson will be joining us. He is an inspirational figure, and it is fitting given that Roundtable has been an inspiration for many men. Roundtable changed my life, as it is a fantastic organisation giving young men the chance to support their local communities."
Decision due over parking. Councillors are poised to clamp down on commuter parking at Mitchell Deva Station. A parking committee is meeting today and is being urged by officers to impose waiting and parking restrictions. The matter was originally considered on November the 9th, but a decision was deferred so the City Council could consult the Parish Council and South West Trains. However, the Parish Council has said they are not proposing to increase parking at the Village Hall, and South West Trains and Network Rail have no plans for additional spaces. The station car park is regularly full, meaning commuters are clogging up nearby roads. But commuters said the lack of parking was frustrating. James Drewer of Wanston Lane, Wanston, said, "The proposed restrictions are going to prevent a large number of local people from using Mitchell Deva Station and force them to drive to Winchester or other stations instead. The reason there are problems at Mitchell Deva Station is that there isn't enough parking. The idea that the solution should be to massively reduce what little there is defies logic and will just kick the problem elsewhere." Liberal Democrat County Councillor Jackie Porter said, "Accidents on Overton Road, restricted views from homes, blocked driveways and high numbers of drivers speeding through the road, narrowed by the long lines of parked cars, have prompted this proposal. I strongly believe that the only way we are going to get the train operator to provide more spaces is to call their bluff and restrict parking. The Village Hall has tried to help and has opened up some spaces for commuters, but frankly, this just restricts users of the hall, which is becoming a risk to the hall bookings. So long term, it probably isn't economic for the hall either. It's hard for commuters, I know, but this has to be done for safety's sake. There are spaces for users of earlier trains, but still some commuters park in road spaces, often for days."
Pupils Grill newscaster. A renowned broadcaster became the interviewee on a visit to a Winchester secondary school. The BBC's Andrew Harvey visited the Henry Beaufort School in Hairstock to be interviewed by Year 8 pupils as part of the BBC School News Report. It takes place across the world, and students are encouraged to research, investigate, and present their own news stories. Mr. Harvey was invited to the school to be grilled about his time at the BBC. He also spoke about what it means to be a journalist and how students can get into the field. He answered questions before heading to the school library with the reporters to be quizzed further, this time on camera. Mr. Harvey said, "The pupils were terrific, attentive, questioning and thoughtful. If only I could say the same about all the politicians I've ever interviewed."
Lobby Dismay at 250 Homes Plan. A campaign group has hit out at plans to build more than 200 homes in Eastleigh in advance of a local plan for the area, which lies close to Winchester County City Council District. An application to build 250 homes in Fair Oak was approved at the local area committee meeting on January the 25th in Bishopstoke. Prior to the meeting, Action Against Destructive Development Eastleigh, ADD, outlined their opposition to developer Drew Smith's application to build on Mortimer's Lane. In an open letter, the group stated the application at Pembers Farm undermined Eastleigh Borough Council's consultation on its new local plan, which will determine development. A draft local plan is due to be published later this year. In December, civic chiefs met to debate and decide the next stage of the controversial delayed local plan. They agreed to focus on the area of the borough north of Bishopstoke and Fair Oak. These proposals are known as options B and C in the report. The council also pledged to continue to look into options D and E, which would see around 2,500 homes built between Allington Lane and Burnett's Lane. The Pembers Hill application falls within option C of the council report. Following the meeting, an ADD spokesman said, "The council has to be condemned for this decision, especially as it comes just after they said it was still looking at all options. The fact that the developers are helped by government guidelines is simply shocking." Winchester City Councillor Sue Cook, who represents Coldham Common, described this as a very disappointing night. They are not listening to the people. A council spokesman said, "Bishopstoke, Fair Oak and Horton Heath Local Area Committee taking a decision on the application at Pembers Hill does not in any way commit the council to options B and C in the draft local plan."
Hampshire's firefighters' new kit is a lifesaver. County firefighters are to be given a new medical kit to help them save more lives. Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service will be giving additional training to all of the people who are being allocated the new medical bags. The new bag contains a defibrillator, a pocket resuscitation mask, thermal blankets, and a variety of dressings, and will replace the basic first aid kit previously carried in all officer vehicles. About 60 of these new medical kits will be given out to officers. Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service has also recently finished placing immediately emergency care, known as IEC, enhanced medical bags, also containing a defibrillator, on all 85 engines across the county, giving firefighters enhanced knowledge and tools necessary to start treating casualties at the incidents they attend, ahead of the arrival of an ambulance. Station manager David Hayborn said, "We now have IEC enhanced medical bags on 85 fire engines and in 19 of our co-responder vehicles. With these additional 60 officer bags, this makes a grand total of 164 extra bags of medical equipment with provided provision for suitably trained medical fire personnel to assist with any situation."
First fundraiser proves successful. The first fundraiser for an upgraded cricket pavilion in Winchester has raised more than £1,400. The cricketing-themed quiz night, hosted by the Pavilion Project on January the 18th, raised £1,450 towards the scheme at North Walls Recreation Ground. Some £300,000 of council money is earmarked, but the project is seeking a further £80,000 from grants, crowdfunding and corporate sponsors. The Pavilion Project is a community-led initiative working with architect AR Design Studio and supported by Hyde 900. It wants to replace the two 40-year-old structures with one modern building. The replacement building will still be used as a cricket pavilion, but with an opportunity for it to have other uses. The evening included the quiz, a raffle for a wheelbarrow of wine, and saw the launch of the Pavilion Project's second fundraising initiative, the Century Board. Sir Anthony Walker of the Pavilion Project said, "We are delighted to have held such a spectacular sellout first fundraising event and successfully launched the Century Board, which will recognise individuals who wish to generously support the project with a minimum pledge of £100.
Braving Shave for Charity. A Winchester man who grew his hair for a year has finally faced the chop for charity. Matthew Jeffrey, 21, of Eversley Place in Stanmore, cut his hair to donate it to Macmillan Cancer and the Little Princess Trust. Matthew, who works at Pets Corner, grew his hair for a year so that wigs could be made from it. He was helped on the day by photographer Jamil Akhtar and Chaps Hairdressers in Winchester, who both gave their time for free. Matthew follows in the footsteps of his younger brother Michael, who has also braved the shave. His elder brother Chris also helps to run Winchester Sea Cadets and is a member of the British Legion. Matthew said, "I know Macmillan do a fantastic job in supporting so many people and their families, and I wanted to do something for them. The Little Princess Trust also do a brilliant job, so I thought I could help two charities in one. I like my new haircut, but it's very cold this time of year. That's the only downside. I think I will be investing in a woolly hat. I would also like to thank Dean Richmond, CEO of Pets Corner UK, for his support through the whole of last year while I was growing my hair. The whole company has been very supportive of it all." Matthew's granddad, Edmund George, said, "As a family, we're proud to support Matthew in this project, and I thank everyone who donated their well-earned money. He's done it with a good heart. You hear some bad things about young people, but when they do good things like this, then I think it should be known."
Police precept sent to increase by £5 a year. Residents in Hampshire are set to pay an extra £5 a year for policing. Hampshire's Police and Crime Panel have approved the measure, which police chiefs say is vital to maintain an effective presence in neighbourhoods. It comes after Police and Crime Commissioner for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, Michael Lane, and Chief Constable Olivia Pinckney have urged the government to rethink its funding formula so Hampshire Constabulary can receive a bigger share. The government funds around two-thirds of Hampshire Constabulary's £305 million budget. The rest comes from council tax. The Hampshire Police and Crime Commissioner carried out a survey which had more than 2,800 responses. Nearly 80% of the people asked said they would be willing to pay for a £5 increase. Recently, the precept stands at £160.46 for a Band D home, which is the 10th lowest in the country. Hampshire Police and Crime Commissioner Michael Lane said, "The precept decision for 2017-18 needs to take into account both the immediate and medium-term resourcing requirements that enable Hampshire, the Isle of Wight, Southampton and Portsmouth to be a safer now and in the future. A £5 increase will put it in a stronger position to meet the immediate risks and continue to respond to the ever-increasing complexity of crime. However, even with this and future projected increases in council tax, it is estimated that if national government funding for policing continues to be worked out in a way that is unfair, we will be facing a funding shortfall of £23 million a year by 2021. Chairman of Hampshire's Police and Crime Panel, Councillor David Stewart, said, "The Hampshire Police and Crime Panel has today approved the Police and Crime Commissioner's proposed increase in the council tax precept for 2017-18, which equates to an extra £5 per year for the average Band D property. The panel is confident that by approving the PCC's budget for 2017-18, the people of Hampshire and the Isle of Wight will continue to receive a high-quality policing service."
Council Fill Job Help Role. Worcester City Council has appointed Carolyn Jay as the new Employment, Education and Training Coordinator to help job seekers. The service will build on the successful employment mentoring program, which is delivered by the national charity SOVA, and recruits and trains volunteers to mentor unemployed people across the Winchester district. Carolyn has spent 8 years helping people at Basingstoke Citizens Advice Bureau. She will be using her project management and communication skills, as well as an awareness of the complex barriers job seekers face in getting back into work. My first challenge is to find employers who would like to give job seekers a work placement and see the rewards for themselves. I hope to be able to make a real difference to the lives of those living in the Winchester district, said Carolyn. Councillor Steve Miller added, Carolyn's temporary role will provide employers with an opportunity to support the wider community by giving job seekers work placements, as well as ensuring job seekers have the skills and experience they need. For a little investment of time, they could be developing their ideal candidate for the future. Businesses in the Winchester district willing for a job seeker can contact Ms. J on 01962 848 346. That's Winchester at 01962 848 346, or email CJ, that is CJAY, at winchester.gov.uk.
Summer upheaval alert for rail users. Commuters travelling between Southampton and London have been warned to expect major disruption to services during major engineering work. South West Trains has revealed how commuters will be affected during their three-week upgrade plan at London Waterloo Station between August the 5th and August the 28th. Platforms 1 to 9 at London Waterloo will close while work is going on, but platforms 20 to 24 will temporarily reopen. The work will see platforms 1 to 4 extended to allow longer running trains on routes in and out of London and create a spacious, modern and accessible station concourse by rebuilding the former Waterloo International Terminal. This will mean fewer direct trains to Waterloo, with arrival and departure times earlier or later coming out of London and into London from Southampton. The railway company is encouraging people to travel either later or earlier than they normally would, or consider working from home or planning a summer holiday. This is the biggest investment in this railway for decades, said a spokesman, and it will provide a significant increase in capacity for the thousands of passengers who use this railway.
Positive response to Wellbeing Advice Day. Parents and carers gathered at Winchester Guildhall to discuss mental and emotional health and wellbeing. The Parents and Carers event, PACE, was organised by Sussex Partnership NHS Foundation Trust's Specialist Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services in Hampshire. The free event offered information and advice about signs to look for, tips for how and where to get support if a child is experiencing difficulties with their mental health, and guidance of how to support them. As well as being open to parents and carers, the day was well attended by education and social care professionals. Experts and clinicians ran a number of workshops covering topics such as supporting a child with eating difficulties, crisis and self-harm, anxiety management, and substance misuse. A number of information stands were run by Hampshire-based organisations and charities that support local families, such as Autism Hampshire, the Prince's Trust, and Solent Healthcare. Feedback from the event was overwhelmingly positive, with 84% reporting that the event had met their expectations, and 9 out of 10 people saying that they would recommend this event to others. Helen Dove, Sussex Partnership's Innovation and Participation Lead for Children and Young People in Hampshire, said, "We were delighted to see so many parents and carers giving us so much positive feedback."
Owners collect 5 abandoned horses, and this is with a photograph of 2 of the rather neglected looking horses. Dumped horses, which were left abandoned close to Alresford Golf Club, have now been collected. As reported in the Chronicle, 6 horses had run wild across the fairways of Alresford Golf Club near Winchester since before Christmas. The horses were previously in a field close to the course, but it is understood that their owners have now collected them. The issue caused concern with local residents, and one of the horses died, cause unknown, prompting fears for their welfare. The news comes after the RSPCA put up notices asking the owner of the horses to remove them within 7 working days. Jenna Shaw of Cheriton said they had been rounded up, but she added she fears they may be left unabandoned again.
Get ready to go driverless. A Winchester City Councillor has said that the authority should be prepared for driverless cars. Councillor Martin Todd, whose wife owns one of these state-of-the-art vehicles, raised the issue at Overview and Scrutiny Committee. It comes as a government report by the Department for Transport predicted that driverless cars could initially lead to longer delays on the UK's major roads. Currently, a series of driverless vehicle tests are already underway in 6 cities around the UK, and in the US, Google is testing driverless car technology in California. Councillor Todd said, "It has quite important implications. It will lead to more point-to-point driving. I think it is possible that the model we have for parking will end." Councillor Corporate Director Steve Tilbury said it is only when self-driving vehicles are more popular than manual cars that the council will consider this. Mr. Tilbury said, "Once it becomes the norm, self-driven cars will transform the way we work." Councillor King Gottlieb added, "We probably have some more time before we need to think about that."
Public notices go online. NewsQuest Media Group, the leading local media group, has announced the launch of a new online public notices platform that enables the public to be better informed about local decisions. Every decision a council makes can affect the lives of people, be it their quality of life, property, local services, or amenities. The new platform delivers added value to local councils by extending the reach of their statutory notices in print to the huge digital audiences of NewsQuest's local websites, many of which now reach over 70% of their local population. NewsQuest publishes the Hampshire Chronicle. Complementing improved visibility and transparency online, the public can also be kept informed of council decisions across any of their preferred mobile or tablet devices, as the site is fully responsive. Key features of the great new service include hyperlocal search by distance and local authority, email alerts, set multiple locations and receive relevant notices, two-way conversation and social media sharing, share, comment, write to your MP or council for each notice, dedicated local authority pages, view notices by council and access their contact details. Future updates will include information on council services, news and updates. The new public notices platform has been in live beta since November last year and is now live across all 160 of NewsQuest's local sites. Henry Four Walker, Chief Executive, NewsQuest Media Group, said, To make sure the public is kept properly informed, it's essential that local councils and government bodies continue to use their local newspaper to advertise their notices in print and online. Our websites now regularly reach over 70 to 80% of the population of their local towns and cities. There is no media platform with this scale of local audience penetration.
Reserve set to be a haven for wildlife. It's the newest nature reserve in Winchester. About 30 hectares of Barton Farm will become a haven for wildlife displaced by development. The reserve, east of the railway, will be transformed into wildflower grassland after a final crop is taken this summer. It is hoped it will be colonised by butterflies, bees and birds such as skylark, yellowhammer, linnet and grey partridge. Around the reserve will be a 2.75 kilometre path and livestock will be grazed to encourage wildflowers. The Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, HIWWT, has been appointed by Carla Holmes on behalf of the City Council to establish and manage the reserve. Reserves Officer Bradley Brown from Itchen Valley Grazing said the aim is to reseed the fields and revive the chalk grassland. Mr. Brown said, "We hope to emulate the likes of Shawford Down and Farley Mount. It will be a really good thing. In 7 years' time, it will be unrecognisable from what it is now." In March, HIWWT will officially take over the land and three oak benches will be installed. John Beckett, 66, retired of Collie Close, said, "What they're doing is brilliant. I fought the council previously as it struck me there were vested interests and I thought this land was going to go." Chris Poulter of Courtney Road said, "It's a really exciting to see that there's conservation grazing with wildflower meadows. It's fantastic." Barton Farm Implementation Manager Chris Hughes said, "It's positive. People are excited that there is going to be a new nature reserve in Winchester."
This is our flower of need. Give us your dough. And this is a report on the mill with a very nice photograph of our mayor with Winnall pupils. Efforts to save Winchester City Mill have stepped up a notch with thousands of pounds of donations coming in. As revealed in the Chronicle, the mill, the oldest working urban water mill in Britain, is under threat of closure. The mill is more than 1,000 years old and suffered serious flood damage in 2014. The National Trust have launched a campaign to raise £125,000 by June. Already £13,000 has been donated, and there was also a cheque of £5,000 from the Winchester Association of National Trust members. Mill manager Rick Weeks said, "It has gone very well. We have had quite a few donations coming in. The public have been very interested in the story, and we hope people come to the opening weekend and find out how we can save the building." At the official launch of fundraising, the mill was packed with volunteers and children from Winnall Primary School. One of the volunteers, David Bonser, 79, from Chandlersford, said, "I think the mill is an important part of the fabric of Winchester. There are many people who visit it." Martin Gregory, 80, from St Cross, is a volunteer who also helped to save Ealing Mill near Totton in 1975. He spoke about the importance of passing on the skills of milling to a younger generation. Teacher Helen Barney said, "It is very important to save it. To have a hands-on, real-life experience is so important. Children at the school were enjoying baking gingerbread cookies at the mill." Kerry Black, 10, said, "I think it's really important to save the mill because it is a part of Winchester and has been for years. We usually come down and watch the flour being made." And Albie Dosley, 10, said, "It is really important to save it. The mill is a big inspiration. I enjoy the activities that are here." Macy Dowling, 9, said, "I think it's important to save it because it's a bit of history for Winchester. It's very old and I find it's good for nature as well as it is a place where otters come and it's lovely. The mill will have activities for its launch weekend, which is free. There will be milling and baking demonstrations on Saturday and a new family trail. To donate, visit justgiving.com/fundraising/Winchester City Mill.
We wish them every success in their fundraising because the City Mill is really a very integral part of Winchester. So every success to them. That concludes our extracts for the week. Our thanks to our editors, who were Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. And thanks to our various technical teams. And our special thanks to the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Jane Rutter. It has been a great pleasure to have her with us today. So we'll all now say goodbye. Goodbye. Margaret Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
Madam Mayor.
Thank you and goodbye.
And Lynn Parker.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.